Okay, I'll have order. Thank you for being here. We are time compressed like lots of organizations. So, all right, Heath, you'll have your 10 minutes. 10, I told you 10.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Again, for the record, Heath Clark, 251 East Front Street in Boise. So I'm going to try to pound through some of the issues that were raised through the course of the hearing. Obviously, stop me mid-sentence if that raises a question. I want to make sure all the commissioners' questions are answered. So a number of items. I'll start first with the pressurized irrigation. And just there was a question about fluctuation and where's the water going to come from and all that sort of thing. So pressurized irrigation comes out of the canal. We have two lines into a holding pond. That holding pond charges over time. That is what then charges the pressurized irrigation system. That avoids the up and down that we're talking about. Idaho law requires us to maintain any historic conveyance of irrigation water to our neighboring properties. So we are not going to interfere with any of our neighbors. My understanding we've had some conversations with Mr. Smith about his connection point, and there's been a willingness offered on our part as part of our plans to look at whether we can actually bring that closer to him to make that a little bit easier. And we're happy to continue those conversations. That's the kind of level of engineering detail that goes along with the subdivision plans, right? We're still at the conditional rezone stage, but that is something that we wanted to stay on the record that we're happy to work with them on. With regard to fire, Mr. Deans was correct. And again, that goes to the subdivision stage. You know, typically you would get your detailed comments at that point. But CUNA Fire has reviewed. They've provided us their initial comments. With regard to the access, Commissioner Van Beek, I know you had questions about that. So the International Fire Code is what drives that question. Generally, the threshold is 30 on a single access, but that is not a hard and fast standard. You can go above 30, for example, if you install sprinklers, right? But that is ultimately going to be a question for the applicable fire official, and that would be reviewed during the course of the plat review. That would also include monitoring to make sure that our turnarounds are wide enough. You know, if we have a single access, they're going to want to make sure that they can get a fire truck turned around at the end of the cul-de-sac. So they will make sure that that's the case as part of that review. With regard to effluent and septic, we're doing an enhanced septic. We have to have a nutrient pathogen study. Ultimately, all of this is going to be reviewed by Southwest District Health, DEQ. They're going to make sure that each of those septic tanks are located properly, they have the correct spacing, they have the right technical specifications. So again, this is another piece that happens later, but you have another governmental agency that's going to be looking over our shoulder to make sure that those are handled correctly. With regard to schools, 2 points on that. We already talked about the will serve component of this, so I'm not going to address that piece. The question of bus stop was raised, and we've started those conversations with the school district. We've indicated that we would provide a turnout area that would allow for some waiting. So we're going to, that is part of the process that's going on, and we are going to cooperate with CUNA School District to make sure that that's done. I also just checked with Mr. Reno about their student generation numbers. As you know, each school district has a certain number that they anticipate every residence is going to generate in terms of students, and they use that for planning purposes. So CUNA school district's number is, I think, 0.56, 0.54. So ultimately what we're talking about across elementary school, middle school, and high school is about 16 students at full build out. So this isn't a situation where you're gonna have 200 new students showing up at just an elementary school. You know, this is a relatively modest project. And I do want to emphasize that this is 29 lots. I think it's 1.6 gross acres. It's a pretty small project. That means it has pretty small impacts. That's why at this point a traffic impact study hasn't been required, but we went ahead and did the additional work to provide counts to prove up the lack of impact on area roadways. The water system. So I just want to emphasize, and if there are additional questions on the water system, I'd love to have Mr. Scanlon address any specifics, but a couple high-level points that need to be emphasized. One is that we're going to be way deeper. We're not going to be in the same aquifer. So if there's an impact on area wells, it's not going to be as a result of our community water system. That going that deep is a protection for us. It's also a protection for the neighbors. Couple other elements. There was some questions about the pump testing. So that was done as irrigation came on. Your worst case scenario comes in call it August, September, and the monitoring shows that after April, the water levels went up 15 to 20 inches. So you at that point, when you hit that worst case scenario later on in the irrigation season, there's already 15 to 20 inches above what was shown on our tests. Couple other items on that. Because this is a community water system, and I think this is an important point, we trigger a whole additional set of DEQ regulations as a result. So that means that we have to go through the technical, financial, managerial process. We have to have that identifies what our budgets are, what we're going to charge. We have to identify a qualified operator to operate the system. And so when you do that community water system, you add an entire level of complexity, but it also provides for an additional layer of safety for the residents. So then I think the last question was about allowing the neighbors to connect, and we have made that offer as a showing of goodwill. Again, because we're going into a different aquifer, we don't believe that any impact to area wells would be as a result of our project. So ultimately, it would be a lot like if you have someone who's on a domestic well and their well dries up and they want to connect to city lines. In that case, that person would pay to connect, to run the pipe up and connect into the city system. We would treat it similarly to that. We have designed our system such that it can be expanded so that we can have the additional capacity to help folks out, but we would see it as a similar model to the cities. And I think, I think the last thing that I would talk about is density, but kind of in the context of the comprehensive plan, which I think the comprehensive plan is really the driving factor in all of this and answers a lot of the questions that we have. So we're in a kind of an interesting pinch point, right? We have neighbors who would love to see 3 to 5 acre lots. We have Nampa saying, you're going to be in Nampa, we want you to be way smaller than what you are. Right, so where are we? If you're in between those two, you're probably in about the right spot, in my view. But when it comes to lot sizes, I think there was a conversation about maintenance of those lots. 3 to 5 acre lots are a lot to maintain. In fact, I have a large project that I work on, have been working on for years in Ada County that has 1 acre lots, and they're converting them to half acre lots. Because the full acre lots, people are saying, are too much to take care of. They prefer to be in the half. So that's a little bit of context for this. It is a big deal to take care of 3 to 5 acre lots. But an additional point about that is that if you're concerned about preserving ag ground, the fastest way to kill all your ag ground is to try to satisfy the demand for lots by using 3 to 5 acre parcels and sprawling out. We should be looking at this from that perspective. Density actually preserves ag ground. So with that, I want to make a couple points on the comp plan. So, the factors that we talk about with the conditional rezone starts with, are we consistent with the comp plan? And then we have the very much related question of whether this is more appropriate than the current zoning designation. So, again, I can't emphasize enough, the comp plan says this is residential. So if it's ag now, it is transitioning to residential under the county's plans. In other words, there's not a policy debate to be had about whether this area is going to be residential versus agricultural. That policy debate already happened when the comprehensive plan designated this area as residential. In fact, forcing the property to remain ag would be inconsistent with the comp plan. So is it compatible with the character of the area? You know, we've shown, if I could have maybe two more minutes, Mr. Chair. You know, the character of the area is mixed. There are 140 residential lots within the area that we showed you. The future planning of the area is residential, but let me make another point with regard to that residential planning. Comp plan says it's residential. Under county code, you have three residential designations. You have RR, R1, and R2. Minimum lot sizes in RR, R1, and R2 are 2 acres, 1 acre, and 0.5. So we're very much, not only are we consistent with the residential designation, but we're consistent with the kind of ballpark of what the county talks about in terms of what it anticipates in those areas. So the next standard is whether it's compatible with surrounding land uses. I think we need to be realistic about this. Our average lot size is well over an acre, almost it's 1.6 gross, I think was the overall number. So this is not high density development in any sense of the word. Some of the lots in the area are smaller, some are larger. These are sized for the market and they're consistent with what's in the area. But let's be clear, a 1 acre lot is compatible with a 3 acre lot, just like a 3 acre lot is compatible with a 5 acre lot. They're all residential uses, they're all similar open space. It's also compatible with the ag uses in the area. We provided the letter from the large dairyman. And then I think finally, the question of whether we negatively affect the character of the area. Again, the character of the area already has significant residential use. It's going to be low density residential when NAMPA gets there. That's not going to change as a result of this. And we've mitigated our impact with the community water system that I've banged on enough at this point. And they've also gone above and beyond with the voluntary commitment that they've made to the CUNA school district. So, you know, we think, or we hope, that we've shown you today that conditional rezone's inappropriate. We have provided you with proposed conditions of approval that could be attached to a development agreement. We recognize that that's probably going to go into a subsequent discussion, but we wanted to make sure that it was clear that that's provided. Our next step, if we're lucky enough to get an approval, would be to bring the preliminary plat to you for a review. That, again, is already prepared. That's why we felt comfortable committing in the development agreement conditions that are proposed a cap of 29 lots, because we know how this thing is going to lay out. We just need to hopefully get there. In the meantime, if there are things that the commissioners would like to address or suggestions, we're happy to take that into consideration. And I think my time's up. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions? I don't have any questions. Thank you, Chairman. Appreciate the rebuttal.
So, what an applicable. I'm between a rock and a hard spot. I have your neighbor who says that there's basalt lava flow 2 feet below the surface, and you're spouting septic tanks. I have a problem. I can't knowingly think that I'm going to consider an approval without knowing, is that fact on your ground or not? I know Terry, I've worked with him. My city put in a sewer system. Our basalt goes like this. I think that I feel uncomfortable being able to approve about the services, I'm trying to find the paragraph, E, If it came up from a gentleman that's been there most of his life and they dug a ditch immediately adjacent to our property line that this application is about, that they said that it's that shallow, septic tanks are not viable. In this commissioner's humble opinion, I'm not a sewerologist or whatever that might be, right? I just want to be sure that we're doing the right thing, and this is why we have public hearings, is to try to vet all of these concerns that we have. So, Director, do you have some suggestions how we might move forward with my concern? Because we talked all ends of the water system, and I manage one and understand one. Mine's for around 1,400 people, a few more than this. So I get that. So, but when you put in systems and the basalt is just 2 feet below your dirt, you got some problems.
Mr. Chair, I've asked Tanner to come up because he's much more familiar with the engineering of the project than I am. And I'm going to turn the time over to him to talk about your concern a little bit more. I would just make two kind of preparatory comments. One is that we do have a geotechnical study that is in the packet.
Okay.
Shows the soil conditions out there.
Soil conditions shows, but soil conditions doesn't show the depth.
And I'll let Tanner speak to that, because typically
you
would do test pits, you would review, you would look at what actually is in the soil, and you're not going to spend a ton of money on this project if you don't know what you're dealing with.
I get it, but unfortunately that's one of the criteria that I have to face the public and say, yeah, it says I need to consider that, and this came up in this public hearing, so now I'm at that rock and a hard spot that I have to consider that.
No, I understand that, Mr. Chair, and I would just again point out as well, and I'm going to let Tanner talk at some point, I promise. Again, this is a matter that DEQ and Southwest District Health will weigh in heavily on, including the siting of each of those septic tanks. And so if we move forward, we need to know that we can actually have that conversation with them and know that those can be cited. But let me turn it over to Tanner and talk a little bit more.
Sure. Mr. Chair, so we have completed a geotechnical study. We advanced test pits probably 10 to 12 feet deep and probably a couple dozen spots across the site. So we know the soil conditions pretty well. We've also had a pre-development meeting with Southwood District Health. So Jack Nygaard down there reviewed the geotech report, reviewed our plan. Monica with Atlas has prepared a level 1 nutrient pathogen study.
Right.
That's complete. It's been given to DEQ to review. Southwest District Health also gets to see it. And in the case where you find a lot and you go to advance a septic and you hit lava, there's a few solutions. There's mounted systems. You can blast the rock to get your percolation rates. There's advanced treatment. So there's solutions there, and that's heavily regulated. And so we felt comfortable pursuing this project after going through those due diligence early on.
Okay.
To know that septics will be regulated and safe. And Terry Scanlon, and we were talking at the break, and he said, I didn't hear any testimony that anyone's septic fields have failed in this area. So septics can perform out there, and they'll be sited and regulated on our individual lots.
Okay. All right.
And Mr. Chair, I just point out, and the staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but typically a standard condition of approval is that we've got to hit all of the Southwest District Health requirements with regard to septic siting. So there would be multiple layers of protection on that point. And that is typically something that's pushed to that phase of
the also a siting authority on the plat.
Correct, yes. So Southwest District Health also has to sign off and lift sanitary restrictions.
So, Mr. Chair, those really are your options. One is you could table this decision, request specific more information, or additional time to review the geotechnical report or get confirmation from Southwest District Health. The other option is, as the applicant said, those things would have to get, you could bake it as a condition of this approval, and as a condition prior to preliminary plat, we would have to have more detail. That's usually when they do work out the exact siting of those things, and they're going to have to do additional geotech to work with Southwest District Health. So it just depends on where your concerns lie, at what level you want to engage with that. But they would, if we were to say as part of a condition that septic has to be in compliance with Southwest District Health, that would come up again at the plat. If we're concerned we don't have enough information or we have conflicting information, you can also ask for additional information now.
That's where I'm at. I mean, Mr. Tanner, if you walked down this door and was killed in a vehicle accident, whatever my decision on this ground is going to go to somebody else. And if they are not as ethical as you are, it might not be a great subdivision. So that's my problem. My decision goes with the ground. It doesn't go with you. I don't have any problem with you. I have a problem with making sure, as a county commissioner, I make a good decision on a piece of ground. And so I guess for myself, I would like to have that question, that conflict filled in for me. And I need more data to be able to do that. I hear what Terry Scanlon said, that nobody testified about their drain field flooding and quitting because they couldn't go anywhere with the drainage. So that tells me a conflicting side of the story. So I think I need more data for me to go forward.
So, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, what I would recommend as you begin deliberations with other questions is you could table into either a date certain or a date uncertain, which we would just re-notice, and we could direct staff to work with the applicant to do additional geotech and review the geotech report and get, again, I don't know what that expert's called, an expert
right.
That the developer would need to do that would give you additional information about the ability in the soil to locate septic tanks in this area.
Okay.
So that would be one of your paths that you could do. And I don't know if the applicant has any other suggestions about that, but that would then find out if there's additional information that they could provide or do that isn't already in that geotechnical report.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could. So the two items. One, your point about if, and God forbid that Tanner got run over by a bus, but we are, as part of our conditional rezone, signing a development agreement. That development agreement runs with the ground. All of the commitments that we're making today, and we included them in the proposed conditions of approval, including the conversation with CUNA School District. If Tanner's gone out of the project tomorrow, I'm putting a short fuse on you.
Yeah.
The subsequent owner is going to be subject to all of those requirements.
Right.
And so the important thing is to get the conditions right, and to get them right at the appropriate stage. Right. So what we're talking about here is a conditional rezone. The type of data that I think Mr. Scher is looking for is probably the type of data that doesn't typically come along until you're actually at the preliminary plat phase. And so that is why typically in my experience, having done this for a little while now, that issue that you're pointing to would be handled with a condition of approval that says Southwest District Health has to sign off on all your septic systems. If they don't sign off on it, we're done. We're stuck. We don't build houses.
I hear your argument. And how I see it is we're being asked to put in a higher density than there's anything around it, immediately around it. And so if I'm unsure about the soil conditions and I don't have the data to know that you can stack and pack all 29 in there and you're free and easy besides the ADU issue, to me it goes back to I'm changing the zoning and it may not have the ground to do it. This isn't a city. This is your water system and your individual septics. And if it's a site that won't deal with that, then it's a site that won't deal with it, and the argument about the density is mute.
Samantha has a good point she'd like to share. Mr. Chair, we have one of our consultants that would like to share some thoughts on that.
I was going to be sworn in.
Okay, let's swear in. You ready to swear in?
I do. So, Chairman, Commissioner, I just want to clarify on the preliminary plat stage, we have to go through Southwest District Health. And beyond that, when it gets to the final plat, as a firm, we have to write a subdivision engineering reports, go through multiple levels of checklists and reports, and they have to clarify that data. And that's all at risk with developers. So we could get to that point, we've seen it get to that point, where they don't approve those SERs. and they won't sign the final plat. So ultimately, there's multiple checks and balances throughout that process. One being preliminary plat, as well as Isaac and our team have to write those reports down the line. But those are all at risk for the engineer or the developer.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, because we can't communicate non-verbally across the table, I don't know if our legal counsel has any other suggestions, so feel free to correct me if I'm speeding. Based upon what I'm hearing you say, I think the difference from what we're hearing from the applicant is you do have a criteria in a conditional rezone that you have to address the ability to have essential services. If you do not feel that there's enough evidence or you have conflicting evidence from testimony or other with that, you can ask for additional information, as you could conditionally rezone it, and in this case, it could come up later in preliminary plat, but the conditional rezone action's been taken. So unless you put a very specific condition that that information has to be done prior to preliminary plat, you kind of are down the road before that gets done. I would agree with the applicant that typically it comes up for preliminary plat. What I hear you saying, though, however, is it's a concern here because of that criteria of can we do essential services? And if we don't have enough information at that point, it's within your purview to ask for more. So typically we do see it a preliminary plat, but we can ask for additional information here because when you rezone it, it's separate before we'd get to plat. Additions, corrections.
Great.
We're trying to communicate non-verbally, just... I just want to make sure you know what your options are, and from as you get into discussion, if there is uncertainty, that would be my preference, is that you could table it, let staff work with the developer and see what type of additional information or what kind of experts we could get that information to make sure that before you make a finding of that certainty, it's found at the right rezone process. One more check, anything else? All right.
That's what I'd like to do. I'd like the information. Before I go into discussing, what do you want to do?
Well, a point of order, Chairman. I guess I'm trying to figure out where we're at in the process. There, I know there's no late exhibits, but you want to leave public testimony open to get additional information. I feel like we're in a deliberation process.
No, we're not. We're not deliberating yet. We could close public testimony. This is, we're talking theoretical.
Right.
We could finish with public testimony and close that and ask staff to work with the applicant to bring the board the definitive information that tells us how deep the soil is. So if all of that's viable, I couldn't discern it in their reports that were submitted. Maybe our engineer needs to sit down with this commissioner and educate him. But my problem is I have to keep my mind open through the whole process, and I had public testimony that causes me concern. I get it that it's down the road, but for me, it's not. It's right there on the page. I have to decide that, and I didn't bring it up. They brought it up. The public brought it up, and I owe them to follow that through.
Yes, I agree, Chairman, and I think that I would be in favor of closing public testimony and deliberating some of the thoughts. I've got some thoughts, and I'm always interested in what you have to say on that. But in the absence of us being able to deliberate, which is really where the deliberation process is, I've heard enough testimony that, you know, I think that the outcome is going to be, you know, either we're going to come to a decision after hearing the comments that we can render a decision, or it's going to be a moot decision because there won't be agreement and there will be a de novo hearing at that point.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, again, legal counsel, clarify. Since you're still in public testimony period of asking the applicant, you could close that, go into testimony. Based upon your decision, you could table it to a date certain or uncertain. Either at that point, either reopen public testimony or don't and just have direct information brought back to you.
Right.
We just need to know that when you or if you would make that motion at that time.
Okay. All right.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, just the applicant's concerns to just try to keep the process as coherent as it can remain. If we think that we've provided a lot of the information that the chair is looking for, it sounds like we should spend some time with staff, make sure that that's packaged up in a way that's maybe a little bit easier to digest. And that's something that we're happy to do. We would just like to have a complete list of the items that would that the commissioners would be holding the public hearing process open for, so that we make sure that we can get it all in one fell swoop. We want to be responsive to the commissioners. We want to make sure all the questions are answered, do that all in one fell swoop. And I would tend to think that it would be cleaner to have the public hearing closed after that point, and or just held open only for the purpose actually of that one report. And then have the deliberation. But if there are specific items, we'd love to listen to or have that back and forth with commissioners today. And maybe this accomplishes what Commissioner Van Peek was speaking to, so that we have that complete list of things to come back to you with.
Okay. We've given your time. So I am okay with closing public testimony and instructing the staff to work with the applicant about getting the information about soil depth and the viability of the septic systems. So we've talked about the water to death, and make sure that that's a viable facility of service that's available on this property, because I'm in conflict about it.
Mr. Yes. Chair, I might suggest, if you're finished with that applicant for that you would close public testimony, go ahead and then deliberate. You can then, based upon if you want to reopen it, you can then decide the parameters of reopening public testimony at that point.
Okay.
So that you're not trying to do it as part of public testimony. Is that?
Yep. And that's,
I'm trying to learn to like eye contact.
All right. So if that's where we're at, I'm comfortable with making a motion to close public testimony, and so that's a motion.
And I will second the motion.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So public testimony will be closed. What I would make a motion to do is to request staff, DSD staff, and engineering to work with the applicant to get the commission viable information about the viability of septic systems on this property. That soil depth is going to be interesting to me, because I'm 29 new septic systems out there, and how far does that migrate to any of the other surface wells that are immediately adjacent is what I heard concern. At least that's the information that this commissioner is looking for.
Yep.
You need to augment that?
Yes, I do. And thank you, Chairman. And that's what makes this board a great board, is that we have different perspectives, a lot of experience and tenure driving that in land use. I did hear that concern, but I also heard a concern that you didn't touch on, which for me is going to be part of our decision-making process. We've already talked about the criteria that we have to make decisions. There are 8, and by the ordinance, we have to find positive findings for all of those 8. In the event that one trips that, then it trips that to a denial. So the biggest concern for me, that there's actually 2, I appreciate that the developer and Mr. Voorhoeks presented probably 3 years ago for the Middleton Haven subdivision. I thanked him after that hearing. I think initially it was not approved, but he was able to come back. I'm not quite sure. It did get approved, however that worked. But I liked his integrity, so I want to put that on the record. I inherently wanted to drive out there. I haven't done that yet, but he made an awesome presentation. This is a comprehensive staff report. Some of the comments that Mr. Heath has made, I think are good points that are made, that by making lots a size that people can manage, you do save ag ground. I agree with that. I think that's a right statement. But what we have to look at then is go back. So I'll start with that one in the county ordinance 07-10-23. It was Mr. Clark that referenced the three types of development that we could put in there are RR. Typically, that's how the county, if I'm not mistaken, has designed it or defined a transitional zone. So you have a minimum of 2 acres in the county that transitions from high density to a lower density, and then maybe some other type of application like a large-scale dairy farm. So there's that. The purpose of the R1 zone is to promote and enhance predominantly single-family living areas in a low-density standard. I don't think that we could make an argument that this is a low-density residential area. I'm looking at Exhibit G, Attachment 11G, Chairman. And in that, the average lot size that is the smallest increment out there was decisioned, and I would have been a part of this in 2019. It is a one-lot subdivision on a half acre. I'm not sure how we did that because that really doesn't meet the county's ordinance. There must have been a caveat in there. But other than that, if you look at anything before 1979, when the county really established its land use rubric, the lot sizes out there are 3, 5, 7, 6, and the number of lots in that are less than what this proposal is, but it still isn't consistent in that sense. The same, this looks like phase one and phase two, M&M Mountain Acres, so, and that was in 1972. The number of lots in that is 30, and it's almost an acre, a little bit less than an acre. But most of these lots would classify as that rural living. The thing that I really like about Mr. Voorhoek's plan is he's presented something that he's built. And so if we're looking at a way to have a rural residential feel in an area, he would be the guy because he did what he said he was going to do in that area. The problem, secondarily, that I would have with that, and this is the development agreement, attachment A, that was submitted as a part of this. The secondary dwelling units on that are going to be problematic. So if we're talking already about concerns with a septic system, to allow secondary dwelling units. I appreciate Southwest District Health. I do know several people, and we have been presented with code enforcement issues where either that process failed somehow and there was raw sewage seeping onto a neighboring property, or in an area where there's slope, which it sounds like, I haven't been to this area, but it sounds like there's slope that runs south, and we're talking about effluent. We don't know what the groundwater gradient is. Then the concern becomes real that you would potentially have areas and neighbors that were impacted. Also, in the development agreement number E, and the Board of County Commissioners does have the right to approve waivers of standards in connection with a plat review, but we don't know what that is. Typically, that's to waive sidewalks, curbs, gutter, all that. I don't know. That's not enumerated. The other thing that's hard for me right now, nationally, there is a crisis for the ambulance district. The Canyon County is facing a crisis with emergency management services, including our ambulance. So when we have rural county, and I'll just say for the record, I worked a 13-hour day because we chose to do a ride-along. Last night, all three commissioners were in a different police car, so we're going around the city of Caldwell. But for Canyon County, the Sheriff's Department manages all 604 square miles. And these areas that are farther out, there was testimony put on the record that I believe is credible testimony. If you're in an acute crisis, in an accident, the response time last night was very busy. They were very active. It's going to be problematic to get emergency management services out to that site. So the criteria, the one that you've mentioned for septics, is that available? As you've said, that's number E. But number H that I'm looking at, included in essential public services facilities such as schools, police, fire, emergency medical services, and what measures will be mitigated. The Board of County Commissioners, for the first time in 20 years, approved 4 patrol deputies. That's a significant gap given the growth of Canyon County. If the tax revenue is there, there's a proposal to put additional 4 deputies this year. I don't have the rubrics yet. I saw them for Caldwell, but I don't have them for Canyon County on what the crime incident and what that additional four deputies would service for Canyon County. And I need just a minute on Chairman, because I have jumped around on my... One of the things I wanted to touch on, the variance on the access, they did, the applicant did validate that it's 30 homes, but you can do things to mitigate for that by having sprinklers. If this becomes a subdivision, this is potentially the beginning of the domino effect that would change the nature and the character of this area. There are people, and I get it, I'm a farmer. When the prices are high, be capitalized. That is a farmer's, people don't like to say that, but a farmer has invested everything. It's dirt in the ground, and that's their retirement. And when they have the ability to capitalize, not just by the acre, by the square foot, then the incentive to sell is real. And so the variance on the access, I did not, and that's a preliminary plat stage, but to know if that's stubbed to neighboring properties, the well issues, that, what I heard, put very diplomatically and very politically correctly, the burden to extend that service for water will lie squarely on the person that needs the water. So that's a, you know, I appreciate the statement, but really what it really means is it's still going to be up to the people that have been there 40 years, 30 years, 7 years. They're going to have to pay to extend that service if they want it. We have not addressed the cumulative effect. That I do appreciate CUNA School District being here, but that, again, the school issue, when I hear that kids, that's emotional. If you have children, you're sending them potentially into an environment, a crowded environment. It's hard that we have to worry about safety at school, but there's a lot of things that happen in a school. We need five elementary schools, one middle school, one high school, that's 7. And who's going to bear the tax burden for that? I'm not sure how to do it. I can't get a bond passed for a new jail. And they have sewage running down when the inmates plug up the toilet. You got sewage, raw sewage running down the walls. How do we get that message out that in a growth pattern, people that are here have to help pay for that until there's a viable monetary commitment? To me, $100,000 doesn't touch the monetary lift that's going to be required to have that infrastructure put in. The testimony that from Mr. Scanlon, there is no validation that going deeper into another aquifer is going to be better or worse. It's a point that's an unknown variable. So I can't hang my hat on that. The comp plan density, we talked about that with Mr. Clark's. But if we look, I don't think I looked at the R2 designation. That zone is to provide medium density residential development where concentrations, this is the kicker, should have a full range of community services and facilities available or projected for establishment. So I agree that you could make a rural residential transitional area. I would eliminate secondary homes. You could potentially do an average of... and get some of that, I guess, the average density and have smaller lots in there, but to put or allow potentially, it's a lot of potentially, the secondary, that's going to be a problem in there. And then the CCNRs that are enumerated, the county doesn't have any jurisdiction over that. So on number 7 for the proposed development agreement, those CCNRs that should be reviewed and have appropriate provisions related to the maintenance and ongoing operation of the public water system. The gentleman that testified, the county won't take that over. In some instances, those water systems, they simply, maybe you have more information as the, with some of the engineering background that you have, Chairman, but I didn't have testimony on that that said, here's a fail-proof system for public water that would ensure if that system goes down, everybody in that development's affected. So I've always had my own well. I don't know what a community well is, and I don't really like the taste of city water, so I'm one of the lucky people. but you know, I've got 80 acres and I have enough. I put in two septic systems and I can spread it out. So Chairman, I really appreciate your attempts to mitigate. That's what it is. A conditional rezone is an attempt by the Board of County Commissioners to address the concerns that are brought forth by the public and find ways to help them make that work and mitigate. Do I think that this is better than a high-density city? Yes, I do. I think Mr. Voorhoek's, like I said, I've already talked about what I liked about his projects and the people that he brought with him. But right now, if I'm a train chugging up a hill, I can't make it over the fact that we can't meet at least one. Maybe we could meet the other conditions that they talked about, B, C, and D. Maybe we could get there, but I don't know how we're going to get over H. And I've already talked about if we can't find a, I can't put blinders on and say there's going to be room for kids. That's not stated. The CUNY clearly states we're at capacity. So I don't know if they're going to bring in modules. We had a Middleton proposal, and the testimony was that if you put kids in modules, they don't have bathrooms. If you have an active shooter, they are a target if they're in between buildings and you're trying to find cover. So we don't take these decisions lightly. We have to make sure that we live with the decisions and that the people we're governing for, and right now we're governing not for city services, we're governing for the people in rural Canyon County that put us in this place to have the foresight. And it's a daunting job. You've got almost 40 years on that. God bless your heart. But I always take that charge, and I know you do too. But those are the challenges that I would have to overcome, Chairman. It doesn't have a lot to do with the septic.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, as a point of order, I know public testimony is closed. Just so I can understand the status.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple of the questions that Commissioner Van Beek brought up are not items that we had an opportunity to have a conversation about. So would those items be part of the additional information that the chair was requesting with regard to the septic, or how would we be addressing that?
It'd be easier just to reopen the public hearing portion so you could address it and the public could choose to address it. That'd be the fairest way to deal with that.
Chairman, can I ask a point of order? If we reopen public testimony, does that, if there's a different information, is it just the applicant's rebuttal, or do we have to reopen it for everyone in opposition as well?
Everybody.
So, Mr. Chair, as a clarification of what I hear the applicant asking is, right now, and it's a statement, right now you're just in deliberation. If you get to the point where you want to make a motion to table it, come back for a different point with or without public testimony, if there are other specific items besides septic that you would want information on, that would be the direction we would need.
Okay.
So versus if you get to that point and you choose not to table it, bring it back for information, then that's still one of your options. You're just in deliberation at this point.
Commissioner Van Beek, would it be okay if I, would you consider a motion that would include the request for fire and police and ambulance to give estimation of the time to serve this area, what time period that takes?
That would be fine, Chairman. And
we can't force them, but we can ask.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so in that request, I would want the Ada County Ambulance District, I guess, is who would service that.
Canyon is legally required to serve it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's CUNA Fire, it's Pioneer Irrigation, it's Napa,
right.
Canyon Ambulance. It's
yeah. That's why our election ballots are so complicated, because you have all of these entities.
That's not the right irrigation. It's either Napa Meridian or Boise CUNA, because I'm running off the same head gates.
Okay.
Boise CUNA.
Okay. All right. So,
missing information.
You okay with that?
Yes, a solicitation, because I think with that input from those agencies, that will give testimony on the record as to what the resources are. That's what we're talking about. Can we provide safety? Can we meet the service request for fire, ambulance, all of that, police? That would be a question where Canyon County Sheriff serves that, to have input from the chief deputy on what their response time is to that area of the county.
Okay. Zach, I'm just pondering the complication of a motion that's going to limit subject of future testimony or not. Do you have any counsel on that?
Yes, sir. I think as specific as we can get would be better if we intend to just limit that when we come back. So if we could lay out what questions we want to ask regarding the septic, and then what questions we want to ask regarding other essential services, have those narrowed down in the motion. And then when we return, we'll have solicited some information. I guess we're going to instruct the SD to send out request letters to fire, police, ambulance about their response times. And then we'll have the applicant come back and respond to the septic. And then we'll allow public testimony on those limited areas to the general public.
Okay. All right. So I would move that we continue this to a date uncertain, because we're going to have to get some engineering details found out and submitted to us about the viability of septics, with the concern of basalt, lava, or whatever form of rock it is just under the surface, that we also solicit information from the fire, the police, and ambulance on viability of their response times to this location, and that we would reopen the public hearing for only those topics. Is there?
And I was waiting to see if you're finished with your motion. I'll second. It was a long one.
How you feel?
Oh, I know.
I would entertain a discussion or a modification to the motion.
I second the motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Commissioner, there were other items that when you were in deliberation that you brought up that you were concerned with the criteria. Were there any of those other issues you wanted additional information on besides response times from those agencies and the viability of septic? You also brought up some other concerns related to schools and surrounding areas. So I just want to make sure if there's anything else, we bring you that. The applicant can testify it so that we're not, you know, down the road in terms of, or if there is a criteria that you
right.
like, if information is there, we may be in a different place.
So, Chairman, thank you for that. Then I would want additional information from the school district on how many kids are in modules or what their cumulative. I heard the superintendent talk about there's other proposals, but I didn't get a dollar amount, and I didn't get really an impact of what that looks like. That to me was staggering in another community where the final plats have been approved.
But how would we make that succinct as what they need, what information they need to bring back to you?
So a dollar amount that it would take to build those seven schools, okay, and then the maintenance, that's the construction of seven
but
schools.
I guess we have to limit this to what this applicant's proportional responsibility is.
Right.
So we can't go off, you can ask that information, but how am I going to bring that back down to this application?
And that's a fair question. So maybe we need to go back and deliberate that point. How are we going to overcome the inability to meet that standard of approval in number H.
Okay.
Because if we, it doesn't matter how much additional information we gather. If we can't meet, and I know this week that we had information from Chief on the Canyon County Ambulance, that there's either going to be a reduction in service or there's going to have to be a levy override potentially.
Right. So you could keep it broad. I would amend my motion to include the viability of the of this applicant's impact on the school district. And we would keep it broad so you could address that and the public could address that.
Okay. And then Chairman, I think it's also fair, and I appreciate Director Menchel's I guess reminder of what the concerns were. I would want the secondary houses to be completely off the table. We should not allow a higher density. That's what we would be doing, is allowing a higher density. And we had testimony that says some of those larger parcels get split in. It becomes problematic with shared driveways, septics, all of that. So that would be a question for the applicant to ponder, what that looks like to his project if there's no secondary homes allowed. And then potential, I guess, there was a map that was provided on preliminary subdivisions. I remember one in there. Are there, were there any others that are submittals to development services or that we know are coming to development services in that? Because really the reevaluation of a comp plan change is saying that there's enough movement in an area that we have the map wrong, that we need to reevaluate that area because that area is anticipated to have growth that was unaccounted for, and now you know, and there could potentially be two cities looking at that where they are sharing some essential services. Is that
How would we make that question applicable to this parcel of ground?
Well, I think the question that I'm asking for is, maybe it's just a validation, in the 1 mile radius, are there any applications on file with development services?
We could put that in the motion. They could bring that data back.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Commissioners, just as a clarification, because I think we use the words comp plan and rezone a little interchangeably.
We did.
This is still under the 2020 comp plan?
Oh, thank you for that.
So yep. 2020 comp plan, I know.
Is residential. Yeah.
2020 is residential.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking in terms of rezones that are coming through.
Yeah.
Look at that, but keep in mind, those are still somewhere in process, so I would urge you a little bit to be cautious of using potential to justify in your FCOs. The other thing I heard that you may want to consider your motion is, this came to you as a denial recommendation from PNZ. You would have to have another hearing if you were of the disposition to approve it. That's when we would look at the development agreement. So if you want us, as part of this, to work with the applicant to make any revisions for a potential development agreement, that could be in your motion. Because the secondary housing and some of your things are talking about the development agreement, which wasn't moved forward originally because it came as in a denial.
Okay.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
All right. Okay. So I would amend my motion to, did I already include the school district?
I think you did.
It was muddled. Okay. So rather than in specificity about the ADU, that we would bring for discussion, a further discussion about the developer's agreement. We'll leave it globally like that. So unless you have additional stuff, that would be my motion.
And a longer motion I've never made, so I will second that.
Okay. All right. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So motion carries. So for the public, what we've just done is that we're going to ask for more specific information. The applicant and DSD, which is Development Services Department, is going to work with them to bring that back. The commissioners will not be involved in that. We're separate and apart. And then because we have to have some engineering issues reviewed, we can't speak for their time frame. So this is an indeterminate extension of the continuance because we don't know when we'll have the data ready. And then we will advertise that, and then we will gather back together, and we will speak on those issues only, and then we'll deliberate and make a decision at that unknown future date. I'm trying to read your forehead, and it says I've missed something.
See, it was hard.
I know.
It's just 10 to 5.
Chairman, the only just clarification I wanted to make is, so at this the second hearing, we're going to hear testimony on the limited issues and then allow public comment on those as well.
Yes.
Go through that process. Is our notification going to, are we going to be re-noticed completely for that hearing? Is that what we envision?
Yes, because if it's to date uncertain, we would need to have it re-noticed.
Yeah.
Aware of when that is. It'll be on the website, but if you're within the mailing area, you would get re-noticed too.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that clarification. All right. Sounds like we've done as far as we could go. Yes. All right. You good? We good to close? Okay. All right. I'd make a motion that we adjourn till an unknown date, certain that will be advertised and listed for a future date.
I'll second.
Okay, motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned.